Hi, everyone, and welcome to this special episode of the Passive House Podcast, recorded in Tarrytown, New York, at the FiasCon 2021 Passive House Conference. Before we get started, I want to thank Fias for putting on the conference and for coordinating with us on these interviews, as well as NYSERDA for serving as conference partner with Fias and community partner with us here at the Passive House Accelerator. Thank you, too, to Rockwell North America. Their generous support underwrote all of these interviews, as well as our coverage of the conference. With that, please enjoy my interview with Ian Finlayson of the Massachusetts Department of Energy Resources. Hello, I'm sitting here with Ian Finlayson with the Massachusetts Department of Energy Resources. It's a pleasure to have the chance to sit down with you and chat here at FiasCon. Welcome, Ian.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Could you introduce yourself and your work at the department and maybe lay out a little context for listeners?
Sure. I work for the Energy Office in Massachusetts in the Energy Efficiency Division. And our remit really is to look at energy policy for buildings broadly, but specifically we work on the statewide energy efficiency programs, which are known as MassSave, and then also on regulations like the Building Energy Code, and in Massachusetts what we call the Stretch Energy Code.
And I think that some listeners may be aware of the really amazing progress that's been happening in Massachusetts. And I've learned about this through Beverly Craig, who's quite active with the Passive House Accelerator and is with the Mass Clean Energy Center, or Mass CEC. The really rapid uptick of projects and units that's been happening in Massachusetts. And I know that there's some potential code progress. So there's a lot to mine here in a short amount of time with you, because I know that you're at the center of a lot of what I'm talking about. So what is your, maybe could you share with us some of the key kind of pieces of this policy framework and incentive framework that you all have been building in Massachusetts?
Sure. So first of all, I'd say we've been aware of Passive House and Fias in particular for a long time, over a decade.
Yeah.
And we've really, over time, built a really strong team, I think, to move this forward. So people like Beverly Craig have really accelerated that. But there's a lot of players, and some of your audience might be aware of Passive House Massachusetts at the local level.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the role that other actors are playing. As the Energy Office, we're a little bit behind the scenes on this, but we are trying to steer our energy efficiency incentive programs, and then more recently our building energy codes, to add additional incentive and support for builders, designers, developers to really look at Passive House closely as an option, and then build the workforce and the infrastructure to kind of enable it to take off. As I said at the beginning, our division is the Energy Efficiency Division, and so the fit with Passive House is a very natural one.
Right.
We're as gratified as anybody else to see the market really start to pick up, particularly with Fias projects in the last year or two.
Excellent. And what is the what's the end game for your office? Like, what's the goal that you're working toward?
Yeah. So, in part due to recent legislation in Massachusetts, we have climate goals initially for 2050 net zero carbon statewide, and then 2030 goal was set earlier this year at 50% reductions. And we're now working on a 5-year plan to set a carbon reduction goal for 2025, as well as 2030. And buildings obviously are a major part of that. And so we're looking at our new construction programs in MassSave and building codes together to bring new construction in Massachusetts to net zero as rapidly as we can. Now, when we think about net zero, there's sort of net zero at the building scale, where you've have solar panels or some other renewable source on site, those projects are terrific, but it doesn't work everywhere. So we're also thinking about how rapidly the electric grid is cleaning. And our mission for buildings is really to electrify everything over time and rely on the cleaning grid plus any available on-site renewables to get us there. And we've been through 2 years of analysis for our climate roadmap and seen just how important reducing loads, controlling winter peaking and summer peaking is to the investment needed in our electric grid. And so that's kind of given us renewed emphasis on the building code side and the energy efficiency side to make sure that our buildings, both existing buildings and new buildings, are taking the kind of passive house philosophy of minimizing the peak loads that buildings have.
Yeah, there's been, a journey that a lot of people involved in building decarbonization, a mental journey that a lot of people involved in decarbonization have been through over the last couple of years. Initially with this, because we have this traditional focus on energy efficiency of buildings and operational carbon, and then we started to incorporate embodied carbon into our thinking, and then electrification. And there has been a strain of thought that has maybe assumed that we can just electrify everything and not worry about the energy efficiency. And I know that I'm from Seattle, and I know that some of the conversations have sometimes veered that way in Washington, but it is definitely becoming clear that there's not an option, that it's not possible to reach our decarbonization goals without also doing significant energy efficiency and envelope based stuff. So it's good to hear. I guess from a passive house perspective, it's good to hear that that's the case. It'd be nice actually if it weren't the case, because then we could just electrify everything and be okay, right?
Which if you live in Hawaii, that works. Even in Washington, that's probably a little bit easier. But
right,
in the Northeast,
don't have the same cold. Yeah,
we have humidity in summer and we have snow in winter, at least for a few more decades, hopefully.
Yeah. I should say that I just sat down with Bomi Jung, and we were talking about the notion of beneficial electrification and the idea of housing quality and housing quality being a form of climate justice. So I should backtrack my this idea that it'd be nice that we wouldn't have to do energy efficiency, because the fact is when we're doing energy efficiency, these buildings are becoming better, and we're raising the bar for what a house should be, but. So you presented yesterday, and probably you touched on some of the points that you've shared. But what were some of the key insights that you were sharing with folks at your presentation?
Yeah, so I was on a building codes and policy session yesterday, and I'd say that the crux of that is linking building code to our climate goals in a very explicit way. And building code doesn't really operate in a vacuum. So we're also looking at the incentive programs that we have through our energy efficiency programs as a way of moving the market towards acceptance of energy code improvements. And with legislation that was passed this year, we will have a third tier to our energy code. So we have a base code, which is the latest IECC model code with some modest improvements. Then we have a stretch energy code, which we've had in place in Massachusetts for over a decade now, that is a little bit better than that base code and has historically been energy focused rather than climate focused. And now we're working on a new climate focused net zero tier to our stretch code that we will be coming out with later this year and that we have to make available for cities and towns to adopt by the end of next year. So because that code hasn't come out yet, I couldn't give away all the details, but I was sort of teasing some of the elements that we expect to see. And it'll be interesting to see where Passive House falls in in some of the different building types that are covered by that code.
Oh, there's some suspense here.
The original plan was that we would have a public comment draft out in August or September, and I could give you all the gory details. But timing being what it is.
Stay tuned for more. And the relationship between stretch code and incentives, right? You've structured things to incentivize the people to stretch. Is that right?
Exactly, yes. So we have a whole division called the Green Communities Division in our energy office that does a lot of the outreach and awareness raising at the local level to get communities interested in adopting the stretch code and becoming green communities. And then once you attain green community status at the municipal level, there is grant funding available. So they make a 5-year climate plan at the town or city level, and then we help them with resources, technical assistance, and grant funding to kind of follow through and do a lot of the work there for municipal facilities. But in addition to sort of doing town buildings and schools, the stretch code applies to all construction in that community. So then you're leveraging, private sector investment in new construction. So the new net zero code will be an option for green communities. They can stay on the regular stretch code, which will be ratcheting up a little bit, or they can opt in to this new net zero standard.
Well, fantastic. I think the model that you all are crafting is one that a lot of other states hopefully will emulate.
Yeah, it's been great to see. I mean, the idea wasn't a Massachusetts idea, and it's been great to see a lot of other states, particularly in New England, really looking to bring out stretch codes, or on the West Coast, it's often called a reach code.
Reach code, yeah. Yeah.
We just started maybe a bit earlier than many places, and we put more money behind it. So I think we've had more success than most.
I had a little experience many years ago advocating for a reach code in the state of Oregon, but we weren't at a place where there was where there were incentive dollars tied to it. So I think that piece seems pretty key, because there needs to be an incentive. I mean, it's helpful to have an incentive to encourage people to make that stretch.
Yeah. I mean, I think the recipe is carrots and sticks and tambourines.
So carrots and sticks and what?
Tambourines. the tambourines are the sort of awareness raising and making sure it's in the conversation and enabling sort of local advocacy groups to be aware of this opportunity. And if you go to, in New England, we have a lot of town meetings. So very public forums for town decision making. And if you go there and say the neighboring town got $500,000 last year because they adopted the stretch code, why aren't we doing it? It's a different conversation than maybe in some other places.
Right. Yeah, that's powerful. Well, Ian, this is great, and the work you're doing is so important. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we close up?
Well, I have to say it's very gratifying to come to a conference like FierceCon and see that there's more happening in neighboring states than maybe I was aware of walking in the door. So I think we're seeing projects all over New England. We're still catching up to New York and Pennsylvania in terms of total projects. And then just seeing the people from different facets of the industry really engaging. I've been going to sessions on finance, as well as sessions on embodied carbon. So there's so much more for us to do, but it's really heartening to see just how much excitement there is around the expansion and the growth phase that we seem to be in right now.
Right on. Great. Well, thank you, Ian.
Thanks.